Welcome back to Transform, a podcast highlighting the people and ideas shaping the future of senior living. I'm Austin Montgomery for Senior Housing News. On today's episode, I spoke with Phoenix Senior Living CEO Jesse Marinko. The Roswell, Georgia-based senior living provider operates 45 communities across the southeastern United States. Recently, Phoenix Senior Living acquired three new communities and repositioned one community as the company's first standalone active adult property. The company views active adult as a way to get younger residents familiar with the Phoenix Senior Living brand. In 2025, the company will seek future organic growth through development in urban markets, while also remaining open to future value-add acquisitions.
I definitely see active adult ground-up development being great opportunities in the future for certain markets. As everything, development is a micro-market play. It's never a macro-market play.
Now, here's my interview with Phoenix Senior Living CEO, Jesse Marinko. Welcome back to Transform. Jesse, it's so great to have you again.
Thanks for having me on, Austin. Really, really excited to have a combo today.
Yeah, definitely. I know we caught up earlier this year, and it's going to be great to go into a bit more detail on what's ahead for Phoenix in 2025. So really excited to chat. I think for our listeners who might not be familiar with Phoenix Senior Living, I know we've at Senior Housing News tracked Phoenix's growth pretty closely. But for those who might not be familiar, can you outline what the Phoenix Senior Living portfolio looks like as it stands here at the end of 2024?
Yeah, no, that's great. So we are a southeastern owner, operator, developer of senior housing. Our portfolio consists of 45 assets across the SEC territory, as we like to call it. We have six owner groups that we work with. We currently operate within nine states within the SEC territory. And our product types range from active adult all the way through memory care. We do operate two smaller skilled nursings that are a part of a larger campus, but the large froth of our business is really in the active adult memory care sector.
Great. Thank you. And we know there's been, I think, a lot of emphasis on both that lower acuity product and the active adult, but also on the higher acuity side too. So it only makes sense that that's what the portfolio looks like. And now just here at the tail end of 2024, would you just be able to describe how the year has gone from an operations perspective? I know you and I talked earlier this year. We talked pretty in detail on staffing, but just from an overall operations perspective, what's the year been like?
The theme I would lay out there is continued recovery with less volatility, which has been great because we've had a lot of volatility through many, many factors, whether it be market conditions, capital markets, whatever it may be. So it's nice to see the absorption occupancy gains continue throughout the year that really candidly started in 2023. We're all still clawed away at that margin erosion that is really didn't really hit us till 21, but we started seeing effects of it in 2020. One of the best ways I'd say it is for the first time in a long time, you can really see the light at the end of the tunnel. You know, you can see the industry has a clear path to getting back to the expectations of what we had pre-pandemic. Because hell, it was a half a decade ago now. So can't really talk about it in that form anymore. You know, we've had three or four new problems introduce themselves since then.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. I just, we'd put out a story actually today on margin growth and expectation for 2025. And that was kind of a similar theme I'd heard from operators is that there's starting to be some momentum in recovery, starting to see some more normalized operations and kind of the trends you might need to look out for in regards to expense control on staffing. We know there's still challenges, obviously, but to see, I think, the industry start to move forward is a great sign for everyone. So it's great to hear that Phoenix is also kind of experiencing that as well. When you're thinking about heading into 2025, can you just discuss what the year is going to look like? I would love to know what your priorities might be just heading into the new year.
Yeah, I think like most, the only way we're going to get back there is through revenue growth. And I think when we look at revenue growth, I think one of the things that the last three or four years has challenged us is, you know, I don't think you can just get it through rate or volume anymore. I think you really got to look at all the levers that currently operate within our business and how do we drive it. So we're going to have to do revenue growth through multiple levers, whether that be rate, care, or ancillary. I think that has to condense. That's the only way we're going to claw back at the margins, especially with expense growth still occurring higher than historical numbers. I think training and onboarding consistency is going to be a huge operational priority for us. If there's, you know, from that article we did, Austin, back earlier in the year, you know, the ability to improve your retention and reduce your turnover at key leadership positions has monumental financial impacts. And so I think more consistent training and onboarding is something that we're going to continue to focus on, because those are things we can control. Can't really control a lot of market conditions, but we can control what we do. And then that just dovetails into one of our biggest priorities, is just consistent execution of our processes and systems. I think one of the things that has been rot in our industry is going to buy the new tool that's going to solve all the problems. And then you find out the issue was never the tool. The issue was just execution.
Right.
And so, you know, I'm an old football guy, man. We're just getting back and blocking and tackling. You know, that's what we're doing.
Hey, you're an SEC country. You got to be able to do that, right?
Right.
And just when you're, I know we'll dive into a little bit on staffing here in a minute, but when you're thinking about from a growth perspective and what opportunities you see ahead, can we expect things like new acquisitions, new management agreements, new development, or kind of a combination of these components, or maybe kind of internally and thinking about what you'd mentioned on getting expense control honed in, and also in the initial hiring and onboarding and retention of staff. So when you're thinking about growth for 2025, what opportunities do you see out there?
You know, obviously we all of us operators have to continue to grow our same store business that we currently operate. And I think that's a key factor to maintaining our investor relationships. For Phoenix, as you've, if you've traveled our story and seen it and known it, you know, we have grown through all three platforms. We didn't really become a fee-for-service operator until 21. We were mainly an owner operator. But I definitely see us growing in all three aspects. We've always been opportunistic on the acquisition side. This year, we closed three properties in a very tough acquisition market. And so I think we'll continue to be opportunistic. I'm pretty bullish that I think in 25, we're going to get a couple of shovels in the ground. You know, just looking at the supply-demand metrics, we know we need more supply over the next 20, 30 years, but definitely right, the next 5 to 10. And so we were pretty methodical. We had a science and a process pretty much from our inception of the company to call it 21, where we got 2 to 4 shovels in the ground every year and had a real science and methodology. So I'm looking forward to getting that spooled back up again. The capital solutions there will always be our biggest hurdles to come over, whether it be debt or equity. And then I really see probably the biggest opportunities for us are really going to be management contracts over the next 12 to 24 months. I see publicly traded REITs seeing the success we've had with a large portfolio that we took over in 22, where we 12x'd NOI over 3 years. And I likely see a lot of the larger REITs coming to approach us about potentially taking on assets that they're either breaking leases on or breaking maybe historical capital structures that used to work a long time ago that no longer work anymore. And then for us, I think it'll be, do those opportunities match our footprint and our makeup? We've had to make a lot of strategic decisions on how we grow. I think we've been a lot smarter about our growth over the last 5 years and been a little bit more strategic about what product types fit our makeup.
Great to hear. And I want to backtrack a little bit before we move too far from it. With those three acquisitions, can you highlight where those are, what they look like, and just a brief summary? And then also, too, when you're thinking about new development, even though it's really tough right now, are you still looking at the Southeast, or is this something we can expect maybe a new market expansion for Phoenix on the development side? So we'd love to hear a little bit more about those acquisitions and then also kind of what you're seeing ahead for potential development opportunity.
So the three acquisitions was a strategic buy from a publicly traded REIT that were all in the Atlanta market. They were sensible for us that one of them was a great repositioning play where we took an AL memory care and repositioned it to our active adult brand we call the Hammocks. And so that was a great opportunity to take a product. We're big believers that it's either people, building type, or market. It's one of those three problems when you have a building that's not succeeding. And I think sometimes buildings go through enough damage reputationally that they may never work again as their existing use. And so one of these three acquisitions really made a lot of sense to rebrand. It was in a very affluent Atlanta metro market that made a lot of sense. And so we're halfway through the renovation of converting it to a fully active adult product. So very excited about getting that product up and launched here in the spring of 25. And then, you know, one of them was just a blocking and tackling, steady Eddie, solid performer. And then the other product, we actually too are looking at the opportunities that product has, either from a repositioning or, you know, potentially divestiture, just whatever makes sense. So it was a strategic acquisition that at the time made a lot of sense, and we had the right capital solutions to execute.
Awesome to hear. And with that active adult component, with that one acquisition you'd mentioned specifically, is this part of going to be a new brand of active adult communities for Phoenix, or is this kind of folded into the existing active adult brand? And I'd love to know more about the active adult component of the portfolio. Do you have specific brand subsets? Or I know we're seeing a lot of operators really even on market to market take different branding or naming approach to their communities, regardless of if they're the same continuum type, in this case, active adult. So do you want to just outline what active adult looks like for Phoenix and kind of talk a little bit about that brand so we can understand that a little bit more?
Yeah. So I'm not saying we're the first, but in 2015, we started our company with specific branding lines from day one. So, you know, you got our Phoenix brand, you got our Retreat brand, you got our Pearl brand. We even created a couple of more rural markets, smaller tertiary product brands with the neighborhood and the bungalows. And so this new brand, the Hammocks, which are standalone active adult, is really focused on, serving a huge need in local markets where there are no kind of apartment options that allow affordability to be manageable and then a la carte services together with them. So we're really looking at creating inviting social spaces that allow seniors to interact with one another, but still have enough discretionary income to a la carte the services they want to support their lifestyle, but also not have the hassle of keeping up with the grounds and a house and things of those nature. So we see a huge need. And my gut is, I really think over the next 10 years, you know, I think about my father, who's about to be 80, what he's looking for in his senior housing move, because he's still in his own home. He's going to want something where independence is very, very clear and that he still feels like he's in charge of his domain, so to speak. And I think a lot of seniors going from a 4,000 square foot home, 3,000 square foot home, I really think that active adult IL component is going to be where most of them, it's going to have the least barrier of transition for the senior. And so we're very bullish on that. I think by creating the Hammocks brand, which is really, you know, what you would expect of any Phoenix property, very nice amenities, very well appointed, full service offerings. You know, our Hammocks product's got an outdoor pavilion area, tons of amenities there. They have a gym, they have a socialized bistro, but really want to encourage the residents to lead what they want there. Basically create a platform for them to create their own community within there and drive those activities and help support that. And so still taking very much of a multifamily style staffing approach and management of it, but also being aware of the social programs and leveraging technologies and resources to allow the residents to socialize and create a little bit more of a cohesive environment where they can see themselves really aging in place and enjoying an independent lifestyle that takes the stresses of single family home management.
Awesome. And do you see any opportunity, just to follow up here on that active adult piece with the Hammocks, the standalone active adult, do you see more opportunities for potential acquisitions and conversions to all active adult? Or is this something to where you could see maybe once the development climate warms up, you could maybe go in and have additional Hammocks communities that are just standalone active adult? I would love to just kind of understand how you view maybe the trajectory of the Hammock brand.
Yeah, I think if you're really talking about a hammocks brand that's a standalone active adult, it wouldn't be part of a campus. We have campus products that we label as the Phoenix. So like Opelika, our recent development near Auburn campus in Alabama, it's got 56 active adult cottages. It's got, you know, 80 plus IL units, and then has memory care. And so that brand kind of, that is where you look at more the continuum play that I think has probably been a more historical style development you've seen through probably larger institutional operators and owners. I do see an opportunity in both, candidly, Austin. I think, you know, the basis and the acquisition price will always drive whether or not you can convert a product from an AL memory care or a usage product. And as I say, take it back left on the continuum and drive it to that active adult brand. So it'll really be the makeup of the product as far as like what a seller can afford or from a disposition perspective. So I think that will be opportunistic. I do think there will be opportunities out there because, you know, it's not hard to see. There's a lot of investor fatigue across our sector. And you're seeing a lot of people finally sliding keys or moving on in different directions. And thus, that's going to create opportunities. But like everything in this world, it's kind of a conundrum because you're starting to see some of the acquisition market heat up again. You're starting to see some people really trying to put together capital stacks and get, I won't say aggressive, but more aggressive than we have been in the acquisition space. So I think there will be opportunities there. It'd be hard to say how plentiful that'll be. I definitely see active adult ground up development being great opportunities in the future for certain markets. As everything, development is a micro market play. It's never a macro market play. You know, you can do that, but tend to get in trouble when you kind of get that cookie cutter model going. But I think that active adult brand definitely has a lot of opportunity for ground up development. The key there with development, given the cost of construction, you're going to have a density that can afford it because all of your rates are going to be, you know, at a lower end versus what we're historically charging. You know, one of the things, and I'll hit this later on, but we're trying to get very intuitive on watching how other industries have grown and matured, like multifamily and like hotels, and really taking their analysis down to that level. So within PSL, we're really talking about things in rate per square foot, you know, and what that means. And so I think when you look at the active adult product, you're probably more in the $2 to $3 a foot range. Versus when you're in the AL memory care product, you're at $20 a foot. So you don't need the density in those structures to be able to achieve the margins and the profitability historically that you can. But an active adult, at $2 to $3 a foot, you're going to need to throw down some density to get to the margins and the numbers you need to offset the development costs. So it will be an interesting dance on how to make that work. And I think it'll really thin the amount of markets that active adult can go on a new development. I think it's going to have to be highly dense major metro markets that that product hits the ground with. I think that's the only way it'll make it work.
Yeah, and we heard at NIC in September a lot of operators speaking to us about active adult and some of the opportunities there, but also some of the challenges on how lean operations have to be able to make that segment work and to be able to hit a margin correctly. So I learned a lot about active adult this year and just the really tight operations that really are required to make things work on the bottom line. So definitely will be interesting to watch. When you're thinking about active adult, I know you just spoke on it referencing your dad's emphasis on independence and seeking that independence through his life as he transitions into senior living. Do you see active adult as a great conduit for people to make that first step? I would love to know, maybe just from a high level, how you're thinking about active adult, maybe from a growth perspective. Seems like it's a great transition into the continuum and gets people familiar with the Phoenix Senior Living brand. How do you look at it?
Yeah, I think active adult is a great conduit. I think you nailed it, Austin. I think it's going to be the path of least resistance for a senior to make a move decision. It's going to feel the most like home, feel the most like what they came from. I'm a big believer in the campus settings. I mean, when we look at all of our product types, the products that have maintained operational consistency over periods of times are those campuses that offer the full services. And so I see active adult, the main form of it being as a part of a campus. I think on the standalone perspective, there'll be niche markets where it makes a lot of sense. But yeah, I really see active adult allowing seniors a higher percentage of move-ins coming through there versus, I also think you're going to see length of stays lengthen, because that's something we've seen really constrict across the AL memory care platform. I mean, there's stats out there from all the way as low as 8 months of length of stay, all the way up to 15 for the AL memory care side, which pre-pandemic was more like 24 to 28 months. But with the average age of moving at 83, it's just sheer math, right? And so I do think your gut is right that active adult is going to be a great conduit. But I think there's a fine line there in the fact that, you know, if you're a standalone active adult, some people may struggle with, well, what happens as I continue to age? There's another move. There's another thing. So I think that active adult play, you're really going to have to be strategic on moving the move-in age left pretty considerably by about 7 to 5 years. I mean, how do we grab that 75 to 78-year-old senior who probably doesn't need to be in their home, and it's probably where, if there is an accident, it's going to occur there, and get them in a setting where the accident still may occur, but at least there's going to be more people around and supportive services to not make it as catastrophic, so to speak, when that incident occurs.
Interesting there. I really appreciate that color. That's super helpful. And when you're thinking about staffing, I know you touched on some of the pieces around retention and also on hiring. I think there, and you mentioned some challenges around expense control. We know every operator's biggest expense is their staffing. And when you're thinking about staffing, I know we talked about it earlier this year, and we talked about specifically kind of how you really make sure you have the right people in place at a regional level to help support the local teams on the ground. But just what's the staffing climate been like in 2024, and what areas do you see as priorities on staffing headed into 2025?
Yeah. So, I mean, listen, the wage rate growth has slowed, right? Which is great, but it's still creeping at rates that are higher than historical. So it's still something we're trying to put a finger on and figure out what's the future going to look like. And you know, it's funny though, sometimes the same things that have been the problems are still the same things that are a problem. Nurses are still really hard to come by, and good, solid ED leadership is still a struggle, right? And getting people to run a restaurant, a home care, and a hotel all under one roof. It's a hard job, 24/7, 365. So getting those positions filled are still one of the biggest struggles. Frontline staffing has improved, but I mean, nationally, the numbers are as clear as day, right? There's still a deficit across the country. What did I see? The recent article came out. 4 of the top 10 fastest growing jobs in the country are in healthcare. And even to go further, specifically, care aides are set to make up 12% of the net job growth over the next decade. That is an estimated 821,000 jobs forecasted to come through care aides. That's a lot of people to hire in a society that at times doesn't have a huge demand for people to pursue that field, which is a hard struggle. So you kind of got chicken and the egg problem there. And so that's why I go back to when you ask about what our goals are: training, onboarding, retention, staff development, and pouring into our staff. Because you can either pay them more or invest more in them. And it's one of the two. And we just choose to invest more into our associates from a growth and development perspective, and try to provide meaningfulness and growth within their job.
And just in terms of that front end, I know obviously that first 90 days is a pretty crucial period for onboarding, and we've heard a lot about operators making efforts to align more closely with their new employees, either giving them a mentor or giving them a clear path for constant check-ins, maybe on a weekly or monthly basis, just to touch base with them to make sure that they're not feeling overwhelmed or anything like that. But when you're thinking about the front end of the staffing funnel right now, what are some things that you've seen that have worked well for Phoenix this year, specifically on that front end of improving retention and obviously kind of on the path to career development as well? So what are you seeing right now just on the front end?
Yeah, so we've been big believers of it since day one. We've had in-house recruiters for, I don't know, 6 years, however long we've had them for a long time. We definitely know the communities need the support and the aid on that front. you know, I think the consistency of executing weekly group interviews and making sure that we're constantly bringing staff in and laying eyes and trying to meet new good people with servant leadership hearts and trying to bring them within the organization is key. The one thing I've learned is not one single silver bullet will solve your training and onboarding. Some people need a mentor. Some people need to be left alone. Some people just need a manual and let them go to work. But I think like most training and development programs, you have to address all phases of how people learn and develop. So I think you have to have some visual components. I think you have to have some teach, show, mentor, train. I think you have to have some online content that allows people to service the training needs when they have the training and then forget what they were just asked or taught, which is very normal, right? It's a lot of information in 90 days to learn. And so I think investment in your HRIS systems within your company is huge. And then I think mentors, you can never replace a good mentor. If you think about anybody's growth within their career, they always reference a person who leaned into them or invested into them. That was their greatest trajectory of their career. And so I think having those type of people and leveraging them and taking your success stories is huge. And I think the biggest thing is just being very authentic to your staff and being honest and transparent and communicate about where they're at and tracking their development along the path is crucial. Consistent communication has got to be the key, which is hard because these are busy jobs. There's a lot of distractions. But if there's anything I've learned, if in anything in life, if you invest in the front end, whether it's working out, whether it's weight loss, whether it's training someone, if you put in the work, the outcomes will come. But you got to put in the work.
Definitely. And when you're thinking about 2025 and what might be the biggest challenge for the industry as a whole moving into next year, do you still see it as staffing or do you think it's kind of more on the financing side, capital side? Where are you seeing the biggest challenges when you're looking at 2025?
I think staffing is always like an easy answer, but we've always had staffing challenges. We had staffing challenges in 04, staffing challenges in 08. Like, that's just a part of our business, right? We're trying to grow a business in a sector where not a lot of people are chasing a career. And I didn't answer that on the last part. I think one of the pieces I did want to ingrain is like, I think career maps are really helpful. Like showing a non-certified CNA, just like what we call a resident care person who's got a good heart. Hey, let's go get your CNA training. Cool. Now let's go get your med tech training. Great. Cool. Now let's have you do leadership supervisor training. Cool. Hey, have you ever thought about going to nursing school? If that's not your path, have you thought about back office support HR? Is that more your path? And really laying out a good career map is how you help solve that. But, you know, going back to the question you did just ask, I don't really think that's going to be too big of a, I think that problem will always exist. And I think we always have to address it and deal with it. I think the capital markets are going to be the biggest driver and challenges for 25. Whether it be investor fatigue, debt solutions are getting better, but they're not great. Are equity and investor expectations going to lighten it all or change? I don't see that happening. And so I see that being a big challenge. I think people who have the financing and have those solutions solved and have the right partners that are invested in the space long term will probably grab some opportunity in 2025. I think one of the largest things that faces our industry is industry maturation. I think we are watching an industry start to evolve and have to look at the industry differently from what used to occur. We had a really good run, call it from the 80s to, you know, now with a couple of hiccups along the way, but 20 to 24 was kind of the biggest hurdle we've ever been presented in our industry. I think anytime you're presented with a challenge or a hurdle, it either forces a company to grow and mature and pivot on how they operate business or choose not to. And I think that the latter of the decisions is not a great one. I think it could result in what you're seeing. You're seeing a lot of operators exit the space, you're seeing a lot of operators consolidate and leave the industry or have to be bought out and consolidate with a larger operator. And I think that industry maturation and us challenging the way we've conducted and done the business is going to be huge for 25.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of question marks, especially as we get into maybe a, potentially maybe more favorable development climate, maybe at the end of 2025. I've heard we just recently had our build conference where we had heard a lot of different perspectives on previously we'd heard thrive in 25. We're not sure if that'll when that'll be in 25, but yeah. It sounds
December
like
December 31st.
Right. Yeah. Could be the latter half of the year. Jesse, last question here. Would love to get your outlook for what's ahead in 2025. Where do you see the biggest opportunities for the industry?
Well, I'm very bullish on where the industry is headed. I think supply demand metrics weigh heavily in our favor. And I think the current capital markets actually, in an odd way, only help because they're increasing absorption because getting new deals done is very hard right now. And so given those markets, I see at minimum a nice 3 to 4 year run of, like, I think in the next 12 to 24 months, we could reach occupancies that are above and even maybe challenging historical highs. So I'm very bullish about that. I see the biggest opportunities in our industry really through innovation. I think trial and error as an industry, as our industry continues to mature, will be very key. And I think leveraging new resources like AI tools and other meaningful data points, whether it be fall detection or nurse call systems or whatever current platforms, better med management, HRS systems, whatever it may be, I think taking those data points and then driving strategic key strategies from those data points is going to be massive to the opportunities in the future. And I just think challenging the norm is going to be, in my opinion, the key to success for the future years.
Well, Jesse, thanks so much for joining us here on Transform.
Thanks for having me, Austin. I really appreciate it.
That does it for this episode of Transform. I'm Austin Montgomery for Senior Housing News. Thanks for listening.